Good morning, one and all. Thank you for joining us this morning. You know what it's like to leave the house on a Sunday morning with other responsibilities and to sort of drag oneself to Washington Heights. And it's a beautiful statement of the Mesiras Nefesh of people in our community. What's that? Microphone? Okay. So really, thank you very much. I also want to acknowledge, I guess she's not here yet, but Dr. Blau, who will be speaking after me this morning. Microphone? They don't have this microphone for people my size. They need for the Kol Yom Rishon edition. I just want to acknowledge Dr. Blau, who will be speaking after me this morning. Obviously, I'm sure Dr. Blau is well known to everyone here, but both Dr. Blau and Rabbi Blau have been tremendous role models, not just for myself or for my wife, but really for the entire community, so many of the thousands of students who come through the yeshiva. So I just want to acknowledge her presence here this morning. I was thinking about a somewhat disturbing contrast, a disturbing image over the course of this Shabbos. Of course, this past Shabbos, we read Sefer Shmos, or Parsha Shmos. And in Parsha Shmos, it really begins, as the Ramban describes, to describe the Sefer HaGeula, the Book of Redemption, beginning, of course, with this week's Parsha, continuing through the Geula, through the building of the Mishkan, ultimately ending up in Eretz Yisrael and settling Eretz Yisrael, all part of this process of the Geula, described so beautifully by the Torah and by the Rishonim. And the distinct characteristic of that Geula is marked by the nature of Am Echad, right, the idea of the nation experiencing it together, the idea there were only Zoche for the Torah and Zoche for the Geula, Zoche for the land. If it's something that's experienced together as a nation, that's the true ideal of Am Yisrael. And I'm contrasting that with an image which plays itself out over and over again in different ways, in different contexts, on a daily basis in Eretz Yisrael. The specific image was of a family member living in Eretz Yisrael a few years ago. In Yom HaTzmut, they were driving down their street with a flag attached to their car with all their children in the car. And as they drove down the street in Yom HaTzmut, the car was stopped by a giant bonfire, and it wasn't a bonfire from Simcha, people dancing, it was tires being burned in the middle of the road. And somebody came over to the car, the van, where my family was sitting in the van. They ripped off the Israeli flag, and they threw it into the bonfire. And it's very somewhat, the act itself is despicable, but it was even done in a more menacing way. And that contrast of imagery, of the promise of a nation leaving Egypt based on its nationhood, and coming to Eretz Yisrael as a nation, and embracing Eretz Yisrael as a nation, and really the present reality, and the conflict over religious Zionism nowadays, the conflict over the settling of the land, something which should disturb any sensitive soul. Any sensitive thinking person should be disturbed by that contrast. What I want to discuss this morning is just a little bit of the background to perhaps why the passions are as high as they are, some of the background in halacha about the question about selling the land of Israel. If people have any thoughts or reflections or questions, so you feel free to bring them to the fore. The place to really start about the question about Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, many pesukim in the Torah, perhaps the most explicit is in source number one, Harashtem es ha'aretz v'yishavtem ba, you will conquer the land, you'll be yoresh the land, v'yishavtem ba, you'll settle them. Okay, ki lochem nosati es ha'aretz l'oresh es osa, a famous pasuk at the end of Sefer Bamidbar, and Rashi explains this pasuk in a way that is not an obligation about settling the land. But Rashi says, Harashtem sa'aretz, Harashtem osa, miyoshveha, v'yoz v'yishavtem ba. Meaning that if you remove the inhabitants of the land, then you'll be zocha to live in the land. I mean, this is an obligation not so much of any random person living in Teaneck or living in fill in the blank, to move to Israel. But this is an obligation, very simply, that if you want to settle there, it's not going to happen by itself. No one's going to swoop down and remove the inheritance, but it has to be through, via the mechanism of v'harashtem, that you have to go ahead and you have to remove the inhabitants. So Rashi is not explicating a mitzvah l'doros, an eternal mitzvah. Rashi is describing the reality of this is the way that if you want to settle there, it has to happen. Now, of course, who disagrees with Rashi most famously? Perhaps if you ask, what's that? Well, Satmar, yeah, but we'll talk about that a little later. But there are Jews who well predated Satmar who engaged in this debate. But probably the most famous voice in this arena was the Ramban. The Ramban is so closely associated with the idea of Eretz Yisrael. We'll discuss a little bit more in a few moments about the Ramban's own personal life and his relationship with Eretz Yisrael. But the Ramban says in many, many places that there is an absolute, eternal obligation to settle the land of Israel. The Ramban said, again, if you can even skim along in source number 5, it's mentioned even a few lines, V'harashtim esa'aretz v'yishavtim ba'am, ki lochem nasati esa'aretz l'oreshes osah, that's the pasuk, al dasi zu mitzvah sasehi. This is an absolute mitzvah sasehi, and it's mitzvah sasehi in the time of the Ramban, 800 years ago, it's mitzvah sasehi now. Every Jew is obligated to move there. The Ramban describes in other places as no different than a person's obligation to put on tefillin in the morning. It's an absolute mitzvah sase, according to the Ramban. The Ramban has a lot to say about this mitzvah moving to Israel. I'll just mention there's a famous source which we don't have included in the Mar Makomos, but where the Ramban is at his lengthiest, and that's the following. We know the Gemara tells us at the end of Maseches Makos that there are 613 mitzvos, something that all of us have always known, but the Gemara only has it there at the end of Maseches Makos. And of course the obvious question is, okay, the Gemara sort of did the easy part. There are 613 mitzvos, great. Now what are they? What are these 613 mitzvos? No one ever comes out and tells you exactly what they are. No one ever gives you a list of these are the 613. And since the time of that Gemara, there's been like a bloodbath of rabbinic literature, for lack of a better word, trying to figure out what are these 613 mitzvos. And the Rambam very famously records the Sefer HaMitzvos, and he leaves off certain things that the Ramban objects to. The Rambam does not include certain things that the Ramban does include, and vice versa. So at the end, the people have at home a copy of the Sefer HaMitzvos. At the end of the Abraham Mitzvos, the Ramban has a list of those things that the Rambam messed up on, that the Rambam left off. And there, in that list, number 4, is that the Ramban objected to the fact that the Rambam left off settling the land of Israel. And the Ramban there has a lengthy piece discussing this obligation. And we'll discuss in a few minutes why was it that the Rambam did leave it off. But there is the place that the Ramban described, along with here and other places, the mitzvah moved to Israel. The Ramban said, in fact, something which I think will take many of you by surprise, that the only place where there is a biblical obligation to perform mitzvos is in Eretz Israel. That all the performance of mitzvos in Chutz La'aretz, where we are now, is not from the Torah, it's only midrabbanan. But the only obligation to perform the mitzvos on a level of a din d'oraisa, on a level of the Torah, actually is in Eretz Yisrael. It's a very, very striking and significant opinion of the Ramban. The Ramban, in other places, I mentioned briefly, has the term called chibas ha'aretz. There are certain places, for instance, the city of Akko. People have been to Akko before. Akko has a very, very long history in the Gemara and in Jewish history. Nowadays, people don't go to Akko so much, Bizman Hazem. But Akko, there's a discussion, is it in Israel, is it not Israel? There's a contradiction about where Akko is. And the Ramban said that while Akko is not technically in the land of Israel in regards to the mitzvos, the trumos and maisros, it is in Israel in regards to the obligation of chibas ha'aretz, of loving the land. So the Ramban has that terminology. The Ramban felt that Eretz Yisrael is a place of a specific manifestation of God's Shechina. In the same way that Har Sinai, God manifested himself, his holy presence on Har Sinai, and in the Mishkan, and in the Beis HaMikdash, the Ramban felt there is a palpable spiritual difference of Eretz Yisrael and the other countries. That God's presence is there, right, more so than anywhere else, as an actual physical presence of God's Shechina in Eretz Yisrael. And the Ramban himself is a person. Anybody know where the Ramban lived? I'm sure all of you know where the Ramban lived. So the Ramban lived in Spain. The Ramban was a fascinating, fascinating personality. He was a personality probably that we will never see again, as far as his vast knowledge of halacha and Kabbalah and science and medicine, as far as his leadership, as far as his passion. The Ramban was like a once-in-a-lifetime personality. And the Ramban, his whole life, yearned to go to Israel, but he was bound by the responsibilities, and something changed that. Everybody know what ultimately made the Ramban go to Israel? In one word? The disputation in 1263, which really should be a topic of its own shiur and discussion at some point, but the Ramban was brought into the disputation in Barcelona. Like most disputations, this was advanced and propagated and brought forth by the Jews who had converted to Christianity. And the Ramban knew very well that if he was going to get dragged into the disputation, his life would be at risk if he were in fact, I guess, defeat, for lack of a better word, the forces of people trying to prove Christianity. And supposedly, from what you read, both from the Ramban and from others, the Ramban was masterful. And the voices, the critics of Judaism were silenced in that debate, and so much so that the Ramban's life became endangered. And even though he was promised security by King James, he felt that he was no longer safe in Barcelona, so he left Spain to go as an older man to Eretz Yisrael. And he writes his son, which can be found in the Kisvei Ramban, letters of what Eretz Yisrael was like, what Yerushalayim was like, when he got there following this disputation in Barcelona. And he described, you couldn't even find a minion. Right? In Yerushalayim nowadays, you can't not find a minion. It's like anywhere you go, people are dragging you in for a minyan somewhere. But back when the Ramban went, following 1263, there was no minyanim anywhere. So you couldn't find 10 Jews. Imagine how sort of depressed the Ramban must have been. His whole dream was to settle in Israel, and there's a mitzvah to move to Israel. He gets there, and it's like there's nothing going on. And the Ramban actually founded or started a minyan in the area now, in the old city, where the Ramban shul's at. But that's the Ramban's history of Eretz Yisrael. There's a mitzvah d'oraisa. There is a special allocation or manifestation of God's Shechina in Israel. There's a mitzvah of chibas ha'aretz. That's all sort of the Ramban when it comes to Eretz Yisrael. The conflict with Rashi is that Rashi is describing the reality of when you come into Israel. If you want to settle there, you have to get rid of the inhabitants first. Rashi is not describing a mitzvah ludoros. As opposed to the Ramban is saying that this pasuk, harashtim sa'aretz v'yashavtim ba, is a mitzvah forever. That is not just limited to that generation. The second position in regards to the mitzvah settling Israel, first we saw the Ramban. This position is less famous. It's a position which is discussed by the Rashbam, Bava Basra, and also by the Vilna Gaon in his commentary on the Shulchan Aruch. I owe an apology. The mistake must have been mine and not Rabbi Charkam and Karen, who works so hard on Kol Yom Rishon. If you look at number 7, so the real Marim Makom is the Shulchan Aruch of Ezer, Simon Ayin Hesef Katan Yudalid. I must have had a different version of the Shulchan Aruch, and therefore my Yudalid is different than what's here. So I'll mention the Vilna Gaon outside, but it's a very, very fascinating position. The basic shita is that to move to Israel is not a mitzvah in and of itself, but it's only a hechsher mitzvah. To move to Israel, to settle to Israel, just to live there and to soak up the atmosphere, that in and of itself is not an obligation, says the Vilna Gaon, or implies the Vilna Gaon. But the only reason you should go is that by being there, so you can fulfill mitzvos that one could not in Chutz La'aretz, trumos, maisros, Shemitah, etc., by being there that allows a person to fulfill those mitzvos. What's the context here in Eben Ezer? Eben Ezer, of course, deals with issues of relationships between men and women, Kedushin and Gerushin. So people are probably aware of the famous Mishnah that's actually photocopied on the first page, that a man can force a woman to move to Israel, and a woman can force a man to move to Israel. And as we all know, this is not a theoretical case mentioned thousands of years ago, but the issue of one spouse wants to go, one spouse doesn't want to go, these are things which have taken root and have existed for thousands of years since then. And if the woman doesn't want to go to Israel, the man can divorce her without a ksuva, and the woman can go to Israel and have the man divorce her and give her a ksuva. That's the halacha mentioned in the Mishnah of the Enek Ksuvos, and it's that Mishnah that gives rise to much of the Talmudic discussion of the value of being in Israel, some of which we'll discuss in a few moments. The question is, does that still apply bizman hazeh? Is it true that even nowadays, a man can sort of force his wife to move to Israel and not he can divorce her without a ksuva and vice versa? So the answer to the Vilna Gaon is that it works only in one direction. And this is not in any way meant to be sexist. But it works in the direction that a man can force his wife or can divorce her without a ksuva, but the woman cannot do so for the man bizman hazeh. Why? What exactly is the difference? So the Vilna Gaon said that the reason to move to Israel is for the mitzvos that a person can fulfill in the country. And the Vilna Gaon, and I'm not even sure what the Vilna Gaon means by this, said that bizman hazeh, the man still has mitzvot he can fulfill in Eretz Israel. Therefore, even bizman hazeh, so the Vilna Gaon, you can divorce your wife or force her to move there, right? And as opposed to the woman, where she doesn't have the mitzvot in Eretz Israel, bizman hazeh, and as a result, she can't do the same. Now, that's all the Vilna Gaon said, and he sort of left it at that. What he doesn't make clear is what exactly does he mean? Which mitzvos nowadays are relative or relevant for a man but not for a woman? So maybe that's what the Vilna Gaon meant. Maybe she doesn't know anything, so she doesn't know anything, so then what connection does she have to Mrs. Tluyos Baaretz? As opposed to the Vilna Gaon said, sometimes the Beis HaMikdash, where women were just as relevant in regards to bringing karbanos, maybe that's what the Vilna Gaon meant. If there's no land, again, which of course nowadays probably not true, but certain times the Vilna Gaon that was true, so maybe that's what the Vilna Gaon means. But either way, what underlies the position of the Gaon is that it's related to mitzvos performed in Israel, as opposed to the Ramban that said it has nothing to do with the mitzvos there, it has to do with just being in the country and being there. That's the position of the Vilna Gaon. The third position, perhaps, and I say perhaps because we'll see that it's been a source of endless debate and conflict for the last 1,000 years. And when I say debate and conflict, I mean of the most dramatic variety, is the position or the non-position of the Rambam. We mentioned before the Rambam excludes any mention of moving to Israel in his Sefer HaMitzvos. He leaves it off the list altogether. And the implication is that perhaps he doesn't believe that there's a mitzvah to move to Israel. And that, in fact, is the position, somebody mentioned before, the position of the Satmar Rebbe, famously described in the Sefer, the Divrei Yoel. But that position of Divrei Yoel is based on a famous commentator in the Rambam Sefer HaMitzvos. And I should say he's probably not so famous. He became famous because of the comment I'm going to say now in his name. But this really is where his fame comes from. And that is the commentator of the called Megillas Esther, which is mentioned in source number 11. I see already we're going to be running a little short on time, so we're not going to do the whole thing inside. But he gives a commentary on the Rambam Sefer HaMitzvos. And he says that there's a very simple reason why the Rambam leaves Yishuv Eretz Yisrael off the list, and namely that's the following. There was a point in Jewish history where there was an obligation to move to Israel, but once we were already sent into Galus, once we were sent into exile, there's no longer an obligation. And that's based on a famous Gemara, which I'll bring your attention to, in source number 4. The Gemara says that God made 3 Shavuos. God made 3 promises to the Jewish people or to the world following the exile. And one of those promises, if you take a look at the last few lines, the story is number 4, Achas, 3 lines to the bottom, Shelo Yalu Yisrael Bechoma, that the Jews will not come back. They will not settle en masse the land of Israel. Once they were removed for good. And only once Mashiach comes is a time for the Jews to resettle. And this is a shvua that God promised the world and the Jewish people again at the end of source number 4. And based on that, the Megillas Esther said, that's why the Rambam does not include the mitzvah Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, because the Rambam believes that nowadays there's no mitzvah. Once we are out, lo yalu b'choma, we're not supposed to come back en masse and settle and have an organized country and organized land in Israel. Let's take a look at the last two shavuos. Okay, so hold on 1 second. V'achas shehishbiya HaKadosh Baruch Hu es Yisrael shelo yimridu ba'umas ha'olam, which is probably not in our nature. We were sworn as a nation to not in any way reject or rebel against the umas ha'olam. V'achas shehishbiya HaKadosh Baruch Hu es ha'odei kochavim shelo yishtem b'dovhon b'Yisrael yos midai, that the nations of the world should not subjugate or should not antagonize or should not minimize the Jewish people. That's one of the shavuos as well, following the exile. So the Megillas Esther said that that's why the Rambam doesn't include it, because of this Gemara, that the Rambam is making this Gemara normative, halachic, and that's why he doesn't include it. And this was taken up, of course, and other sort of far-right Hasidic groups, based exactly on this Megillas Esther and this Gemara and the Rambam's absence, so to speak, of the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. Now, obviously, you can give a whole shiur just about this Megillas Esther. This Megillas Esther is not accepted by really anybody other than the few people I mentioned. And the reasons might be somewhat obvious, maybe not obvious. Well, so that's something which has been discussed by most of the Acharonim in the last 100 years, Mesh Chachma and others. Even if you want to say that these shavuos, these swears, are normative, and all of you have enough experience in learning Gemara to know that often a statement in a Gadata is not necessarily something which creates a normative halacha. There are many statements in a Gadata that are supposed to create a message or an image, but it's not necessarily something that we paskin like. So even if you do want to say that we would paskin like this Gemara, clearly the other end of the bargain has not been upheld. The third shvuah is that we shouldn't be subjugated yoser midai. Even if you want to say that was normative, certainly any thoughts of this Gemara being normative have gone out the window 70 years ago, 100 years ago, 300 years ago, 800 years ago, however many years ago, this Gemara has gone out the window. You can no longer say that this Gemara is normative. Please. What's that? So who's Miguel? Quite honestly, I don't even know his name. Right, but not that I know everybody's name, but the point being is that he was significant only in regards to this comment. As far as if you speak about the Megillas Esther's fame, he wasn't someone who was widely popular, but this statement was sort of seized upon by some of the sort of the groups to then sort of make a statement about, to some degree, you know, Zionism and the Zionist entity. So exactly. So this Megillas Esther, if you want to see it, I mean, I sort of copied the important part, but if you want to see the whole thing, it's in the back of the Rambam Sefer HaMitzvos, next to where the Ramban describes what the Rambam left out, then the Megillas Esther sort of commenting on that Ramban. Now, it's probably true that it's not pshat in the Rambam anyway, that there's no mitzvah Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, because the Rambam in many other places, he doesn't come out and state explicitly, but the Rambam seems to imply that there is a mitzvah to move to Israel. There are many other statements the Rambam makes throughout the Mishnah Torah that would give a different impression, and that impression then would be hard to justify what the Megillas Esther, the Sa'amar Rebbe, and others have learned from it. For instance, the Rambam says, the Rambam brings down this Mishnah Gemara and Ksuvos, that a man to divorce a woman and vice versa, to move to Israel because of the obligation of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. The Rambam records that, already implying again there's an obligation to settle the land of Israel. The Rambam says in Hilchos Shabbos, I believe I photocopied the source, people want to sort of look at it as I say it, in source number 9, that a person is allowed to even see halokeach b'ayis b'eretz Yisrael min hagoy, Mutter lo lomar lagoy lichtiv lo shtar b'shabbos. I can have a non-Jew buy land for me in Israel on Shabbos. I can call somebody who works for me and say, buy land for me in Israel on Shabbos. And even though that's what the Isser, the prohibition of Amir Lanachri, of having a non-Jew do work for Shabbos, because of the obligation of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, that in fact is allowed, says the Rambam. And there's many other comments as well. The Rambam brings down the famous Gemara, and the Rambam says that there is a prohibition to leave Israel. You're not allowed to leave Israel, says the Rambam. Under almost no circumstances is a person allowed to leave Israel, which of course makes life tricky a little bit living there. But again, the implication is that there's some obligation to settle there if you can't leave there. So all the... What then? And the Rambam left. Of course, the Rambam left when he was young, and based for all sorts of good reasons. The Rambam, obviously we know, had a very, very difficult early part of his life, so he left. But, okay, it's a problem. It's a kasha. But the Rambam himself left. But anyway, the point being is that he describes the prohibition of leaving Israel. The implication would be then that there's an obligation to settle in Israel. All those things make the position of the Megillas Esther and the Sabra Rebbe hard to justify. And if that's the case, what's the reason then the Rambam did not include settling in Israel as an obligation? If we sort of reject the position of the Megillas Esther. So there's maybe two different possibilities that are mentioned, sort of a technical nature. One is mentioned by Rav Soloveitchik and by the Brisker Rav and by Rav Moshe Feinstein, that namely for the Rambam, again, this is a somewhat technical distinction, that the mitzvah of living in Israel or settling in Israel is not a mitzvah chiyuvis, an absolute obligation, the way that putting on tefillin is an absolute obligation, but it's a mitzvah chiyumis. You're fulfilling the ideal of living in Israel if you're there, but there's no absolute obligation for you to actually go there. And that's why it's not listed in the Sefer HaMitzvos. By being there, you're mekayim v'harashtim sa'aretz v'yashavtim ba. But it doesn't mean that you're absolutely obligated to go there in the first place. And because it's not an absolute obligation, says Rav Moshe and others, therefore it's not included in the Sefer HaMitzvos. And there are many examples of a mitzvah chiyuvis versus a mitzvah chiyumis. For instance, mentioned very briefly, there's no obligation to eat matzah after the first day of Pesach. But if you do, after the first day, you are fulfill the mitzvah kiyumis of having matzah all 7 days. But there's no absolute obligation to do so. And often we see that distinction between a mitzvah kiyumis versus a mitzvah kiyumis. There's one other, we're still a little bit short in time. There's another position as well, which is more famous, but also somewhat of a technical nature. That is a mitzvah or discussion by the Avnei Nezer and many others as well. Again, a technical distinction, but it's based on the Rambam himself that says that if you have mitzvah aleph, which is necessary to bring about mitzvah beis, right? For instance, if the purpose of building the Aron is to have a mishkan, right? So then all the Rambam does is include the mitzvah of building Aron, and there's no need for the Rambam, based on his own logic, to include the mitzvah of building a Mishkan, because that's obvious, that's included in the mitzvah of building the Aron. Thank you. Meaning, if part of A implies B, so there's no need to include B as well. So for the Rambam, he includes the obligation of Hachareim Tachareimim, that you have to destroy or weed out the nations of the world, the Shiva Amimim, that's an obligation from the Torah. Implied in that obligation is that you have to settle the land of Israel, and therefore technically there's no need to also include the mitzvah selling the land of Israel, because that's implied already by the fact that we have to rid the country of the Shiva Amimim. So therefore, according to this answer, the Avnei Nezer and many others, it is an obligation, even according to the Rambam, to live in Israel. It's not stated as its own mitzvah, because it's part and parcel of the mitzvah of ridding the land of its inhabitants. But in reality, for the Rambam, it's a mitzvah as well. Exactly. But part of that, obviously, is we have to get rid of the Canaanim. It's because we have to be living there, and therefore that's part of the mitzvah of getting rid of the Canaanim and others. Okay, if that's the case, If at the end of the day, according to Ramban, it's a mitzvah chiyuvis, an absolute obligation to live in Israel. Let's say according to the Vilna Gaon, it's a hechsher mitzvah to live in Israel. According to the Rambam, depending on what shot you take, maybe it's an absolute obligation, maybe it's a mitzvah chiyuvis versus a mitzvah chiyuvis. But these are the opinions of the major deciders of Jewish law, not to mention all the other things that we discussed. Now, leaving Israel. So the question that really bothered the Achronim of the last 100 years is, why is it then that I'm not there, right? Why is it that you're not there? Why is it that, you know, you look around the room, it's clear to me that everyone here is dedicated to Shmiras HaMitzvos, and that if I were to go to you and I would tell you, if you're Machmir on Pesach, to make sure that, I don't know, fill in the blank, that you triple lined your refrigerator, so then why would it be that something which is perhaps a mitzvah chiyuvis of living in Israel, so why is it then that we've not done? So that's been a question which has bothered the authorities. And obviously what's underlying bothering the authorities is the fact that Jews try to do the right thing, which is a very optimistic perspective, right? To say, well, they're doing the wrong thing, you know, people don't want to say that. So there's always sort of a look, sort of how do you justify, you know, the obligation or the lack of response to that obligation? So let me just mention briefly four opinions that are brought down. Some are earlier, some are later. This was actually discussed first, or this question, anybody know by whom? In the Sefer HaKuzari, by Yehuda Halevi, in the time of the Rishonim, this was one of the questions which was posed by the king of the Kuzarim, right? And the question is, why can you not be there? And he said, there's no good answer. I don't have a good answer why we're not there. And we know, of course, Yehuda Halevi himself was probably the most passionately Zionistic of the Rishonim and Levi ben Mizrach, and he said, I don't have a reason. There's a famous story, which may or may not be true, but it sounds better if it would be true, that Yehuda Halevi came to Israel and he was writing his poetry and he got trampled just as he got to Israel. I say it sounds better, not for him necessarily, but the image of Yehuda Halevi as being this passionate Zionist. So he said, there's no good reason. There is a mitzvah to go. Why are we not there? Okay, there's no good reason for it. Now, other people did not take that same approach of the Kuzari. There's an approach taken, perhaps most famously, which I photocopied, which is mentioned in Tosvos. Just to draw your attention to it. I can't find it now. Number six. So Tosvos says in the name of Reb Chayim, so the Akshav Eina Mitzvah Lador Be'eretz Yisrael, I'm sorry, if you look at the first line, so Eino Noeg Bizman Hazed, the Ika Sakanetz Drachim, because of the danger of going there, the danger of living there, the difficulties of being there. And the truth is, nowadays perhaps it's not the case, but even 50, 60, 70 years ago it was the case, and this was what really for thousands of years as people use as a justification. The sakana, the lack of ability to make a living, all those other things are sort of part of this reason, Reb Chaim. That's the second reason. There's a third reason brought down by the great German Acheron, the Trumas Hadeshen. The Trumas Hadeshen said that it's an obligation to live in Israel to serve God. But there are those people who might feel, and many people do feel this way, that they could serve God better in Chutz Laretz. Professionally, they can make a contribution to a community. There are, for all various reasons, a person can say that if the purpose of living in Israel is to create a connection with Rosh Hashanah and fulfill the mitzvos, every person has to think to themselves, the Trumas Hadeshen, of where is going to be the place that I can either contribute or do the mitzvos properly. And the Trumas Hadeshen says, perhaps as a result, people felt that place might be in Toronto as opposed to Beit Shemesh, and perhaps maybe that was a justification over the years. There's a last justification brought down by the Avnei Nezer, which very much rings true for this generation. The Avnei Nezer describes, and this is described even more beautifully by the Ran, in the Drashas HaRan, about being in Israel is not just living in a country, but it's feeling the Hashgachas Hashem. I think it's something that anybody who has like a sensitive soul has experienced this in their life. There's something different in the country, the experiences feel like they're touched in a certain type of way. The Ran describes the Midrashim that says that every country in the world, God has appointed a sar, an officer, an angel took over that country, Ben Eretz Yisrael, God has direct hashgacha. This is described by the Chassam Sofer, who was a very big religious Zionist in his own way. And part of being there means feeling as though you're really seeing the Yad Hashem in your life, in your daily life, and seeing the Yad Hashem through your parnasa. That's part, says the Amnei Nezer, of the mitzvah of living in Israel. If you were to be a person who was living in Israel, but you were supporting yourself based on foreign donations, or you were a periodontist, says the Amnei Nezer, probably didn't know much from periodontists, but just in the modern day parlance, who would go to the United States, you know, 2 weeks out of the month to make a living, and you're supporting yourself not through sort of feeling the Hashgachas Hashem in Israel, but through foreign money. So maybe perhaps then, says the Avnei Nezer, there's not an absolute mitzvah d'oraisa to move to Israel then, because you're not really experiencing what the mitzvah should be about. And while the Avnei Nezer perhaps doesn't believe this, what he said that might be the justification as to why more people have not come, and people are still living in Chutz Laaretz. So those are the four opinions as to why people sort of desisted from living in Israel. Either that there's really no reason, that's the reason of the Kuzari, the reason of the Truma Sedeshin, a person has to decide where they're sort of best off spiritually, the reason of Reb Chaim and others about the danger of living to Israel, and the reason of the Avnei Nezer, that a person, if they're living in Israel, but they're being supported from outside, they're not experiencing the Hashgachas Hashem. The question is, all of these things, and we'll take questions afterwards, describe perhaps people not living there, but it doesn't really describe the negativity that some people feel towards the Zionist enterprise. And why should that be the case? So you don't live there. You don't think it's a mitzvah to live there. So you don't think there's an obligation to go. But why sort of the negativity of people who passionately believe in sort of the settling of sort of the settling of the land of Israel? And that really has its roots perhaps in one of a few different areas or arenas. Okay, so maybe hold for 1 second. And the point was made, and the distinction was made, that there's obviously a distinction between the person who has Avas Yisrael, the Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, versus whatever the debate might be about Zionism as Zman Hazeh, where Zionism was sort of used as a political term. The question is, why is that? I mean, if what the enterprise of people want to move to Israel is to settle the land of Israel and build the land of Israel, etc., so then why then should that be something which is such a source of debate and conflict, if in theory all that is just sort of an expression of the settling of the land of Israel? Again, maybe that's a simplification of the question. Well, because... Okay. Yes. Right. So exactly. So let me just mention again, just very briefly, perhaps a few different approaches to understand sort of that issue. Again, the Zionism being understood as sort of resettling the land as a country, as a political entity. So why would there be objection to that necessarily? So again, so there's a few different approaches that are taken. One approach, again, we already saw a little bit from the Satmar Rebbe about the idea of lo yala b'choma, of not coming and settling the land in an organized way, and to settle a state with an army and a government seems to imply an organized state. That's the opinion of the Satmar Rebbe. There's an opinion of the Minchas Elazar, which we'll discuss even further in detail, that he felt the Minchas Elazar was the Munkacher Rebbe. So he felt similarly to the Satmar Rebbe, but somewhat different. He felt that to be in Israel was inappropriate. It was not appropriate because the overall environment was an anti-religious environment, and therefore to be in Israel and to settle in Israel, he said, was absolutely wrong. And he encouraged other followers of Munkach and others to not go because, again, the influences that were there in Eretz Israel, there were those who believed, and this is brought down the Eim HaBanim Smecha and other places, that Golus was something which was decreed by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, perhaps similar to the position of the Satmar Rebbe. And who are we to go ahead and say, well, this is what God wanted from us, but we're going to go ahead and go anyway, even though HaKadosh Baruch Hu brought us into Golus, so how can we go ahead and organize a movement to go against the will of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Those were some of the opinions brought down in writing of why there was a rejection of this movement. Either, again, we're in Golos for a reason, the environment there is not suitable, we're going against the will of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. More recently, perhaps, in the last 100 years, much of this debate really fell upon the famous disagreement between Rav Kook and Rav Yosef Chaim Zonnefeld, which I'll just discuss very briefly in the next few moments. A tremendous amount to be said about both of these tremendous giants, both of these huge giants, Rav Kook and Rav Zonnefeld. We know that Rav Kook was born in Europe, he was educated in Volozhin Yeshiva. He became the Rav in Yafo in 1904. And then he left before World War I because he was ill and ended up spending his time in Chutz La'aretz during World War I. Rav Zonnefeld was the head of the old yeshuv in Eretz Yisrael. And what was unique about Rav Kook, Rav Kook then came back after the war, and there was a movement to make Rav Kook the chief rabbi in Yerushalayim. And there was a rejection of that. There was an uproar against Rav Kook becoming the chief rabbi of Jerusalem. And the question is why? What was that debate about between Rav Zonnefeld and Rav Kook? Between the old yeshuv and what Rav Kook reflected, what Rav Kook represented? And what it really revolved around was how do we view the modern Zionist entity in Eretz Israel? The Zionists have made it very clear, and proudly so, it wasn't incidental to their philosophy, that the state was supposed to represent a national strength that had nothing to do with religion, that to be religious and to keep the mitzvot was something from sort of an old way of life that just held down and minimized and diminished B'nai Israel and just led to anti-Semitism and led to all sorts of other things. And the state was supposed to be about the strength and independence and the new identity and the new rebirth of a nation, sort of unshackled from the ideas of tradition. And that's obviously something which the old yeshuv clearly rejected, as did Rav Kook as well, the idea that you're going to settle the land of Israel, the place where HaKadosh Baruch Hu Shechina resides in, the place that has to be Ha'aretz Taki Yes Yoshveha, a place that will reject those people that do not keep the mitzvos. So the people, the old yeshuv, they were horrified by the presence of the Zionists who came in. And while Rav Kook himself, while Rav Kook himself obviously spoke passionately about the need of Eretz Yisrael being a place where the Torah is kept, Rav Kook had a certain spirit about him. He had a certain optimism about him. That optimism was fueled by many things, and Rav Kook was someone who was very dedicated to Hasidut and to Kabbalah and seeing holy sparks in what's around people, and to go ahead and to elevate those holy sparks and even those things that are in the area of Chol. Like Rav Kook said about science and philosophy and things of that nature, the idea of the educational system is not to reject those areas, but to somehow see the sparks in them and to elevate them. Rav Kook saw beauty all around him, and many people have said that perhaps Rav Kook's, maybe perhaps his Achilles heel was this unbelievable Ava Sisrael he had. He had an Ava for everything around him, he saw the good in everything, he had a way of looking at everything in a positive light. People came to him and they complained about the Chilul Shabbos that was taking place in Eretz Yisrael, and people are being Mechalel Shabbos, and it's worse now than it's ever been before. And even any criticism of the land of Israel, Rav Kook felt horrified by sort of slandering the land of Israel. And he said, think about how great Eretz Yisrael is. He said, in Chutz La'aretz, they talk about those people that keep Shabbos. And here people are upset about those people that don't keep Shabbos, and how amazing Eretz Yisrael is. Everything was viewed at this unbelievable optimism. People said that they were moved to be an adherent of Rav Kook just by sort of looking at his eyes, because his eyes had this amazing sort of spark and this optimism. People were drawn to that. And Rav Kook said many, many times in many places is that those Zionists who are coming, who perhaps have absolutely no intention of anything religious, of anything holy, but in their efforts to rebuild the land of Israel. They are capturing the sparks of the rebuilding of Israel. There are holy sparks there. These are people that, because of that holiness, will be drawn back to the Torah. And these are people that will be drawn to the holiness of the land of Israel. So even what they're doing, perhaps themselves, there's nothing holy about it as far as their intentions. But there are holy sparks there that can be seen in the Zionist enterprise. I mentioned even just one statement, one paragraph. These forces, which seem so coarse and base, are uplifted the moment they strive to build a desirable land. It is certainly true of the most inferior amongst them, who barely possess any light of Torah, and even those few who have been stricken with the malady of erroneous philosophies, which are liable to arise in conjunction with deterioration of the times and the generation. Nevertheless, one can readily discern in them, in these Zionists, the glory and sanctity of Israel. All who see them will recognize that they are the seed that Hashem has blessed. And that's the way Rav Kook described the Zionist. It's a very famous comment that Rav Kook made about seeing the energy of the irreligious Zionist playing soccer and being inspired by the energies and the efforts and the vigor of the young youth of Israel and the sparks of spirituality that are there. And this type of philosophy, ideology that Rav Kook had, again, we don't have time to go into more depth, became really the source of conflict between the old Yishuv that wanted to sort of completely reject the Zionist entity, and Rav Kook and his followers, with Tzvi Pesach Frank and Rav Yaakov Moshe Charlap and many, many others, who felt that in the Zionist entity there were sparks of holiness, that there was a rebuilding of the land of Israel, there was the ultimate rebuilding of the Beis HaMikdash, and therefore they supported, because they were optimistic about what Zionism could bring to the country. And of course, an open question is, if Rav Kook looked now, Rav Kook was Nifter in 1935, if he looked now 80 years later, would he feel affirmed in his belief that the resettling in a secular way of the land of Israel was positive, was it negative? And that's something which, of course, we cannot answer for him. And something that obviously is an open question to this day. I just want to mention just in closing, just to recap, and really two thoughts before I recap. The first thought is that it's really a duty for all of us that sometimes, again, as was mentioned before, the issue of Zionism is not necessarily connected to the land of Israel, the land of Israel, as far as the mitzvah d'oraisa, but so often we become distracted by issues of politics, the issues of hashkafa. If a person thinks about Yom Yerushalayim and just the experience of seeing the Yad Hashem and Yom Yerushalayim, that should be something that every person in their own way connects to. When a person sees the trajectory of the Jewish people and what we've survived and what we've built, every person in their own way should feel connected to that, and not to some degree, both from the right or left or middle, to feel distracted by and defined by often political issues, hashkafic issues that are minimal at best in contrast to the larger sweep of Jewish history and the larger sense of hashkafas Hashem in Jewish history. And secondly, that we should always feel that we keep alive within ourselves the she'ifus, the passions towards Eretz Yisrael. When I came to Eretz Yisrael last year, a couple years ago, I was thinking as I drove down Route 1 about really two thoughts. The first is that wherever you go back to Eretz Yisrael, you always feel that you're coming back home to a place. You don't necessarily feel that when you go to a place X, Y, and Z, but that you feel that you're returning back to a place that feels familiar, a place that feels like it calls out to you. And I was so buoyed and uplifted by the thought that that feeling that I had, sort of getting into a car and driving on Route 1 to Shalayim, it was really the same passion that my grandfather in Europe had and his grandfather had, shared by the Chacham Sofer and the Ramban before him. It's a passion, a she'ifa, for the land and the holiness of the land, that even if we can't fulfill, for whatever reason, the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, we can't join the force and settle the land, but the passion to connect to something that is transcendent, the passion that connects to Eretz Yisrael, which represents the place that HaKadosh Baruch Hu manifests himself in, those passions itself we can't let die, even if we're not there, but there's a sense of what that represents in our life. So again, we have the pasuk that says, V'arashim sa'aretz v'yishavtem ba, the person should settle the land, and they understood by Rashi to mean that we would have to get rid of the nations before we settle it. Understood by the Ramban is an absolute mitzvah d'oraisa, chiv d'oraisa, that's an obligation l'doros. That's one perspective. The perspective of the Vilna Gaon that said that's a hechsher mitzvah, that you're there to fulfill the mitzvahs that are there. And the position of the Ramban, which is not clear, he leaves it off as a mitzvah. Either that is because it's not a mitzvah, according to the Megillah Esther and others, or because it's a mitzvah kiyumis, but not a mitzvah chiyuvis, or because, as we said by the Avnei Nezer, the obligation, it is an obligation, but that is subsumed within other obligations, but it is an obligation. If according to the Rambam and the Ramban and others, it's an obligation to be there, why are we not there? We mentioned the Kuzari that said there's no good answer, the Truma Sedeshin who said there is a personal decision each person has to make, the answer of Chaim HaKohen of Sakanas Derachim or other areas hard to be there. And lastly, the answer of Avnei Nezer, that's only a mitzvah if you feel, again, touched by the Hashkachas Hashem, but if you're making a living outside of Israel, perhaps you're not fulfilling the mitzvah properly. Last week we said, why has there been such like a rejection of sort of the settling of the land of Israel, Bizman Ezem? Either again because of the issues of we're in Galus, we should stay in Galus, the issues of perhaps that the environment there is a negative environment. And lastly, I think something that still is felt is manazeh. How do we view the secular settling of Israel? Do we view that the way the Rav Kook and his followers did? And by the way, Rav Kook was different than Mizrahi. He rejected Mizrahi in many ways. That there's holiness in those endeavors, and therefore we should embrace it and support it and be behind it? Or do we view, as Rav Yosef Chaim Zonnenfeld and the old Yishuv did, that all we can do is look at their actions? Their actions go against the spirit of the Torah and the Torah, and therefore we cannot have anything to do with the Zionist entity. And obviously those two feelings are still felt bizman hazeh. Hopefully in our own lives we can rise above those feelings that often dominate the conversation and feel connected to the Yad Hashem, which always is there and present in the entire world, but especially in Eretz Yisrael, the place Shekhash Baruch Hu has chosen, L'shaki and Shmo Sham, to reside his name there. Thank you, everyone. Right. So there's really no halachic status. It's not brought down in the Rambam. It's not brought down in the Shulchan Aruch. It's not brought down in any Sifrei halacha. The microphone's still on. The question was, is there any halachic status to Shalosh Shavuos? It's not mentioned anywhere. It's not mentioned by any halachic codifier. But it's there. But often many statements in the Gemara are there. So the large question that this very well-educated woman is mentioning is, how do you distinguish between an agadah and halacha? How do you know when one is what versus the other? That sometimes is a source of confusion. When is the Gemara speaking in a sort of agadic type of fashion? When is it speaking in a halakhic fashion? But clearly there is a distinction. The question is, when do we know when each Gemara fits into the other one? We'll save that for another day. Please, yeah. Well, I guess what the Munkach would say, that if you're living in Galus, so you know you're in Galus, and the forces that are there are so completely other and different than we believe in, so you can sort of inoculate yourself from those forces. If you're living in Israel and you're swept up by the Zionist passion, and the Zionist passion is that this is, you know, what we should be doing as Jews, and speaking the language of, you know, of Hebrew, and this is what this is the future of the Jewish nation, so perhaps that's more, says the Munkach, or more dangerous than living in the middle of wherever, where clearly there's a distinction between those things.